Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've actually got four martinis for you today, and two of them are good. So happy Tuesday, everyone. Let's start with good martini number one here, Jim. And we've seen this wave of longtime Democratic House members heading for the exits, most of them waiting at least till this term is over, as they see that it's very unlikely that Republicans will lose control of the House this year, and probably as long as the current state congressional maps are drawn the way they are. And so the latest that we see leaving is New Jersey Congressman Rob Andrews, but he is not waiting for the end of the year. He is leaving effective 2 weeks from now. Apparently, he's got a nice new job at a cushy Philadelphia law firm. However, at the same time, it's being reported that he is facing an ethics committee investigation over a family trip to Scotland, paid for with campaign funds, the use of $30,000 of campaign money to pay for flights, luxury hotel stay, and on and on. So people are wondering whether that might be the real reason he's heading for the exits. But either way, Nancy Pelosi's got a lot fewer friends coming back next year, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, let's keep in mind this is a Democratic district, so it's not a great opportunity for Republicans. But the timing is just weird. And if you are suspicious-minded, kind of delicious in that Rob Andrews, it could be a near guarantee for re-election. Like I said, this is a heavily Democratic district. Booker did well. If somebody's resigning, maybe, you know, they'll resign Congress in the middle of a session to take an ambassadorship or, you know, head up some particularly prestigious think tank or something like that. To join a law firm? Really? You know, when you hear this, you think, okay, either he's got unbelievable money problems, and that's the issue, because obviously he'll be making boku bucks over at the law firm, or he's leaving town before the sheriff comes in. Kind of suspicious and odd for that. We'll see how this shakes out, but it really does seem like a very odd, unexpected announcement from Congressman Andrews, and you can't help but get the feeling, with everyone being so blindsided by this, no talk of him retiring or anything like that, whether there's a bit more to this story than what we've been told so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll keep an eye on that. Like you said, probably won't change which party controls that seat, but a lot of Democratic seniority going out the door this year, and in some cases in the next couple of weeks. But on to the second good martini now, and this is courtesy of BuzzFeed through Hot Air, I might add. And it looks like, according to several Obama campaign officials from years past, that they see Hillary Clinton heading for the same problems she had in 2008, even though, as you mentioned last week, Jim, Priorities USA is already in the Hillary camp and is looking to make this an inevitability, but they say that's the problem. Hillary Clinton's putting together this huge machine that looks inevitable, that is scaring away other Democratic people, and it's the machine that's once again the focus rather than a coherent message out of Hillary Clinton. So who knows whether it could still work this time? It certainly could if she successfully scares people out of the race. But very interesting to see that the Obama folks already skittish about Hillary's strategy here.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting that you'd think of all the lessons she could learn. She would have learned, you know, not to re-emulate 2008. And actually, the more you think about it, the easier it is to imagine a scenario in which Hillary Clinton goes off track fairly early on in this, because think about what the state of the country is in 2016. If things are really going terrific, fat chance, then you'd think, you know, look, Vice President Joe Biden keeps saying that he knows in his heart he could be a good president, but he hasn't decided yet. Let me translate that for you. He's running for president. Nobody says, I know in my heart I'd be a good president, but America, you just don't deserve this. You know, every sitting vice president thinks that they should be the president of the United States. And he'd be able to say, look, I've been a heartbeat away for the past 8 years. And when Joe Biden runs, he's going to be running on a very simple message. Keep it going. Now, we may look at that and just see that as, you know, excruciating bloodletting for the American economy. But for a good portion of Democratic primary voters, the guy who's been, could say, like, the next best thing to Obama's third term will be a fairly compelling argument. What's more, it'll be nearly impossible for any Democrat to attack Joe Biden without implicitly criticizing the Obama administration as well, and that strong pull of party loyalty. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton is by no means an outsider to this administration. She's not going to be, you know, Martin O'Malley or somebody who's going to say, oh, we need a fresh face and it's time for a change. It's time for new blood. She's not that either. And so we have a situation in which she will kind of be in this middle ground. And it'll be tough to say that she's going to be, as her friends once said, she'll be the Pope Francis of America, going into an old institution and revitalizing it with new energy. You can't really see that argument. What's the argument for Hillary going to be? You can see a lot of it being identity politics. It's time for a woman president, et cetera, et cetera. But that's totally detached from the condition of the country. And so the question will be, you know, does she know how to do the economy better? And Lord knows we've seen plenty of crony capitalism allegations surrounding the Clinton Foundation. Or does she know foreign policy better? Benghazi. You can kind of see the arguments taking shape here. So the idea that this is a slam dunk for Hillary, look, obviously the poll numbers have her way ahead right now. But it's not surprising that Team Obama might be looking here at seeing the same kind of lumbering Goliath type ready to get knocked off by a David in either the Democratic primary or in the general election.
On to the bad martini now, and we head to New York City. This from the New York Post. Mayor de Blasio's war on charter schools has officially begun. In an unexpected move late Friday, schools chancellor Carmen Farina said the city is redirecting $210 million in capital funding earmarked for charter schools in order to open 2,100 pre-kindergarten seats. The move appears to confirm fears by charter school supporters that de Blasio's mammoth plans for expanding pre-K would be used as an excuse to boot charter schools from public school buildings. And, Jim, we saw this shortly after Obama took office. He and the Democratic Congress took out the Washington, D.C. charter schools program, which had been a smashing success. And so, obviously, loyalty to the teachers union is a major factor here, but the idea that they're basically forcing kids into terrible schools is not only bad in and of itself, it's got to be a losing campaign issue for them.
Having just been elected, de Blasio is not going to spend a lot of time worrying about that. Other Democrats may be a little more nervous about this. But you kind of look at a mayor who, in New York City, obviously very expensive place to live, middle class is feeling kind of squeezed. Crime is obviously better than it was during the bad old days, but it's not like it's completely gone away. Basic city services, they forgot to snowplow the Upper West Side the other day. You look at all the problems of New York City, and they've just elected a man who believes that the two biggest problems facing the city and the ones that he's going to address first are horse-drawn carriages in Central Park and charter schools. People of New York, did you elect a crazy man to be mayor of the city? These are seriously the biggest priorities for this guy, is destroying. One is this, you know, wonderful tourist attraction. But then the second thing is probably the biggest and most significant education reform effort. It is a straight up pay up to these teachers unions. And the idea that, you know, I don't know whether this is de Blasio and his crowd. They all send their kids to private schools so they don't worry about this sort of thing or what it is. But talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, this is bad politics. It is awful policy. It is hurting the people it's supposed to help the most. And it's just kind of a gallingly brazen bit of monopolism on the part of teachers unions to try to, you know, strangle these reforms in the crib before they can take root. You know, we have our bad martinis, but this is a particularly appalling martini today, Greg.
Yeah, and for all this talk from him about income inequality being one of the biggest problems, and Obama being on that same message, you talk about inequality of opportunity. Holy cow. I mean, some of these inner city schools are just deplorable. And to have a chance at a real school, I don't know how many people have seen Waiting for Superman or stories like that, and how passionate these people try to basically win the lottery to get their kids into these good charter schools, and the devastation when they don't is just amazing. And the fact that they wouldn't embrace that idea is just crazy. So, all right, on to the crazy martini now, speaking of crazy. And Jim, we've talked from time to time about the situation in the state of Oregon. As bad as the Obamacare federal exchange has been, the state exchange in Oregon has been even worse. As far as I know, there's still nobody really signed up, and now we're starting to find out why. This is from KATU.com. The FBI is now in on the case because apparently the Cover Oregon folks were basically bamboozling the federal government by making them think they were further along in building this exchange than they were, sending them glossy photos of the homepage and all this other stuff to keep the millions of dollars flowing in. Basically, other states were using what's called the waterfall approach to build their portals, the story goes. Picture it as a car assembly line. First you build the frame, then you add the wheels, then you add the engine, and so on. However, it was an iterative approach in Oregon. Imagine an extremely blurry picture of a whole car, and with each iteration, the picture was supposed to grow a little more clear. In other words, it looked really flashy, but it didn't actually run. So,
yeah.
Sorry, taxpayers, you got fleeced.
Now, I had talked about the idea of taking every state's exchange. We've heard all kinds of problems. Hawaii had a mess for a long time. Minnesota was having unbelievably long wait times, like, you know, more than an hour if you called for assistance. Maryland's way over budget, still not ready to go. But really, in our NCAA-style brackets of all of the states, Oregon is probably the overall number one seed, just for taking forever and having everybody resort to paper. And you ask, how could something like this happen? How does it get this bad? And the simple answer is that people aren't honest, right? I mean, if you're honest with it, you can prepare people for it. There is this mentality of, and Bruce Webster and a lot of other smart guys have written about this, of, well, but we'll spin it a bit as we go up the chain. And then as you go up further up the chain, we'll spin it a bit more. And after a while, the word spin, you know, it's not a matter of emphasizing or de-emphasizing certain points. After a while, it becomes lying. And that's basically what, at least according to this report, it looks like what happened here, that if you cannot create actual progress, then lie and say that you've created actual progress and hope that you can generate some sort of sign of actual progress later. And, you know, the state of Oregon, they ran out of later. It just wasn't ready by the time the deadline is. And they don't know if it'll ever be ready. And it's just, you know, stumbling along. And this is one more example of how bureaucracies never handle these sorts of giant responsibilities all that well. In a corporate bureaucracy, at least you can fire people easily. Much tougher in federal government, much tougher in state government. So ideally, this would be a teachable moment, but I have a feeling politicians will not learn anything from this, Greg. And that is what makes it our crazy martini of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Some really depressing stories in there. Massive corruption on a website, denying kids access to quality education. Well done, folks. Well done.
Yeah, but we got rid of Rob Andrews.
That's good. Maybe we should have had some of the good news at the end. All right, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for listening today, and be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.